Their first mistake was in acceding to Rachel's wishes in inviting her old friends to her 22nd birthday party. The same crew who had celebrated the first time, irrepressible Nikki, Don Stewart and his friend Howard, Kathy Obeg and Marta Tin, her best friend Lina McKeiler, all of them then just out of college, shucking off cocoons of childhood for new lives. Rachel had seen them all since her return, but she had slept and forgotten. And Saul and Saray this one time did not remember that she had forgotten. Nikki was 34 standard, with two children of her own, still energetic, still irrepressible, but ancient by Rachel's standards. Don and Howard talked about their investments, their children's sports accomplishments, and their upcoming vacations. Kathy was confused, speaking only twice to Rachel, and then as if she was speaking to an impostor. Marta was openly jealous of Rachel's youth. Lina, who had become an ardent Zen Gnostic in the years between, cried and left early. When they had gone, Rachel sat in the post-party ruin of the living room and stared at the half-eaten cake. She did not cry. Before going upstairs, she hugged her mother and whispered to her father, "Dad, please don't let me do anything like that again." Then she went upstairs to sleep. It was that spring when Saul again had the dream. He was lost in a great, dark place, lighted only by two red orbs. It was not absurd when the flat voice said, "Saul, take your daughter, your only daughter Rachel, whom you love, and go to the world called Hyperion, and offer her there as a burnt offering at one of the places of which I shall tell you." And Saul had screamed into the darkness, "You already have her, you son of a bitch. What do I have to do to get her back? Tell me. Tell me, goddamn you." And Saul Weintraub woke, sweating, with tears in his eyes and anger in his heart. In the other room, he could feel his daughter sleeping, while the great worm devoured her. In the months which followed, Saul became obsessive about obtaining information on Hyperion, the Time Tombs, and the Shrike. As a trained researcher, he was astounded that there were so little hard data on so provocative a topic. There was the Church of the Shrike, of course. There were no temples on Barnard's world, but many in the web. But he soon found that seeking hard information in Shrike cult literature was like trying to map the geography of Sarnath by visiting a Buddhist monastery. Time was mentioned in Shrike Church dogma, but only in the sense that the Shrike was supposed to be the angel of retribution from beyond time, and that true time had ended for the human race when old Earth died, and that the 4 centuries since had been false time. Saul found their tracts the usual combination of double talk and naval lint gathering common to most religions. Still, he planned to visit a Shrike Church temple as soon as he had explored more serious avenues of research. Emilio Arendez launched another Hyperion expedition, also sponsored by Rijks University, this one with the stated goal of isolating and understanding the time-tide phenomenon which had inflicted the Merlin sickness on Rachel. A major development was the Hegemony Protectorate's decision to send along on that expedition a Farcaster transmitter for installation at the Hegemony Consulate in Keats. Even so, it would be more than 3 years' web time before the expedition arrived on Hyperion. Saul's first instinct was to go with Arendez and his team. Certainly any holodrama would have the primary characters returning to the scene of the action. But Saul overrode the instinctive urge within minutes. He was a historian and philosopher. Any contribution he might make to the expedition's success would be minute at best. Rachel still retained the interest and skills of a well-trained undergraduate archaeologist to be, but those skills dwindled a bit each day, and Saul could see no benefit to her returning to the site of the accident. Each day would be a shock to her, awakening on a strange world, on a mission which would require skills unknown to her. Saray would not allow such a thing. Saul set aside the book he was working on, an analysis of Kierkegaard's theories of ethics as compromise morality as applied to the legal machinery of the hegemony, and concentrated on collecting arcane data on time, on Hyperion, and on the story of Abraham. Months spent carrying on business as usual and collecting information did little to satisfy his need for action. Occasionally, he vented his frustration on the medical and scientific specialists who came to examine Rachel like streams of pilgrims to a holy shrine. "How the hell can this be happening?" he screamed at one little specialist who had made the mistake of being both smug and condescending to the patient's father. The doctor had a head so hairless his face looked like lines painted on a billiard ball. "She's begun growing smaller," Saul shouted, literally buttonholing the retreating expert. "Not so one can see, but bone mass is decreasing. How can she even begin to become a child again? What the hell does that do to the law of conservation of mass?" The expert had moved his mouth, but had been too rattled to speak. His bearded colleague answered for him. "M. Weintraub," he said, "sir, you have to understand that your daughter is currently inhabiting, think of it as a localized region of reversed entropy." Saul wheeled on the other man. "Are you saying that she is merely stuck in a bubble of backwardness?" No, said the colleague, massaging his chin nervously. "Perhaps a better analogy is that, biologically, at least, the life metabolism mechanism has been reversed,
Nonsense, snapped Saul. "She doesn't excrete for nutrition or regurgitate her food? And what about all the neurological activity? Reverse the electrochemical impulses and you get nonsense. Her brain works, gentlemen. It's her memory that is disappearing. Why, gentlemen, why?"
The specialist finally found his voice. "We don't know why, M. Weintraub. Mathematically, your daughter's body resembles a time-reversed equation, or perhaps an object which has passed through a rapidly spinning black hole. We don't know how this has happened, or why the physically impossible is occurring in this instance, M. Weintraub. We just don't know enough."